I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, this is Juna. You're listening to So I Got to Thinking. This episode is brought to you in collaboration with the exclusive Sex and the City apartment immersive pop-up presented by HBO. Gather your closest friends and head down to Covent Garden in London for a celebration of the iconic HBO series Sex and the City, which is releasing on Blu-ray for the first time. You'll have the opportunity to visit the pop-up installation inspired by Carrie Bradshaw's famous New York brownstone apartment, reliving the friendships and fashion that first graced our television screens over 20 years ago. The HBO Sex and the City apartment immersive pop-up will be at Carriage Hall, Floral Street, Covent Garden on the 11th and 12th of December.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast, where we take the iconic questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. This week, as ever, you're listening to Juno Dawson, Dylan B. Jones, and our special guest this week, writer Tommy Doe.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi, guys. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're very excited. Well, I'm very excited. I'm fangirling.
I'm excited as well. Don't steal all the excitement.
We both, in fact, love your notorious Sex and the City TikTok and Instagram videos that you did. Was that during lockdown you did?
Yeah, it was during lockdown. I had so much time on my hands, so I was like, you know, why not? And I started rewatching Sex and the City from the beginning, which it's so good. I forget how good it is. I'm obsessed. And so when I got the email to do a Sex and the City any Sex and the City podcast, I'm so excited.
Thank you. So if you did not check out Tommy's content during lockdown, I can't help you. I don't know what you were doing with your lockdown. Like, just put things into perspective. But it's such a genius idea. So you have basically inserted yourself into Carrie's dramas. Where did the idea even come from?
When I restarted it, I just realized how loud she was. She just is always she has like a yell. She always screams, and I was wondering about her neighbors, and so I just kind of inserted myself into her home life and pretended that I was her neighbor.
So, it's particularly the squirrel scream is the most piercing, I think. When she sees the squirrel,
it's really wild. I mean, I can only imagine on set when they're shooting it, like the crew is just like bracing themselves for, and her voice must be so rasp after take four. That's not a one take thing. She's that thespian SJP. She's well trained. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah. So this week we're on season 4, episode 14, All That Glitters. Where the ladies go to
Do I get to have a potted synopsis? Oh my god, this is all our long time listeners will be freaking the fuck out as everything is backwards and upside down. And yes, I do. I have a delicious potted synopsis.
Amazing.
Carrie and Aiden are just living what at the time I thought was relationship goals, in that they eat KFC in bed. And I thought this was really aspirational, the idea that I could lure a man to my bed to get grease on my bed sheets. I thought that was beguiling. But Carrie frets because she hasn't been out clubbing with her mates for a while, or she hasn't seen them in a while or whatever. So she decides that they're all going to go clubbing, and they go to Trade and Shirtless Gay Heaven, where Samantha encounters the joys of MDMA in the toilets. Charlotte meets Anthony Marantino again and manages to blag her way into, Herman Garden magazine or something? Yeah, Herman Garden. Herman Garden. I forgot. And what else is happening? Miranda doesn't have all that much to do. Have I forgotten what Miranda did?
Oh, she outs her colleague.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, I'm forgetting the, with it. And then, yes, oh my god, and that bitch. And yes, and she comes across, sorry, I watched this last night, so a whole 24 hours has passed. Yeah, she comes a cropper of bitch firm, and Dress Down Fridays are under threat. How was that for my first potted synopsis?
It was good, yeah. It was very organic.
Yeah.
Thank you. It is pure organic synopsis. 100% vegan as well.
You use the word beguiling and I'm obsessed. Like that word just, it's, congratulations.
She's a writer. She's a writer, Tommy.
So romantic. Beguiling. Wow.
What should we tackle first? We normally start with Carrie. Go on, Dylan. You're in charge. I have to let Dylan be in charge. I'm not coping with not being in charge. Dylan, take charge.
So, I mean, what did we think firstly of Carrie? And what do we think of Carrie's bandana armband?
Well, you know, I think in relation to everything, like this episode in relation to the whole series, I think it's like a good spot. Like, we know what to expect from the girls. The writers know what to expect from the girls. It's like this, their dialogue is super nice, like really fast and quick, but it has a nice rhythm to it. And the fashion, I think, for me at this point, an armband that is what, if you're just watching the episode, you're just like, oh, that's a little psychotic. But we've been, I think numb. I'm just numb now to like her choices. So I'm just like, no, great. Yeah. Whatever she feels, sure. Great. Good.
Sure. I wondered genuinely, yeah. Is it an homage to the hanky curd? Like she knows she's going gay clubbing. Is this Carrie attempting to create like a hanky for straight cisgender ally in a queer space? Like, what's the hanky for that?
Huge. Yeah. Huge. I, you know, probably that Patricia Field, she knows. She knows how to signal.
Oh yeah, Patricia knows, for sure.
Is it the same handkerchief, or is it the Hermes handkerchief that she wore for Coulda, Shoulda, Woulda? Do you remember when she like had a handkerchief on her? I think that might be the same one.
I think so,
she has a bunch. It could be. Dylan loves the bandana, so I'm assuming really, really enjoyed the bandana.
Yeah, I do love a bandana. And like I've said before, the most iconic bandana, possibly in television, is Samantha's Chanel bandana in season... Is it season 5, where it's like flowing down to her waist that she wears?
Be no more iconic bandana moment than that. And then I think she has a bunch when she has cancer in season 6 as well.
Samantha, yeah. Mm.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the one when she wears to Richard's party and then she throws the melon through the
correct
window.
Yes, that is the most iconic headscarf. Yeah. And practical. Iconic. Keeping the sun off the back of her neck, which is where you would get sunstruck. So really, she's a very smart woman. I wonder if we need to talk about the rights and wrongs of, now, I was going to say straight cisgender women going to queer spaces, but just 4 weeks ago, Samantha was in a lesbian relationship. Now, so this is the thing. So we have a bunch of women, cis women, going into a queer space. We have a, so we don't have trade in London. We had, until quite recently, a similar space called XXL, which was really gross. It was a men-only environment. I wouldn't even be allowed in. They wouldn't even let in cis men in drag. I seem to remember there was an outcry.
Really? Yeah.
So yeah. I want to know, like, are you a New Yorker, Tommy?
I live in LA now, but I went to school in New York, yes.
So do you know, would trade have let women in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There isn't, I don't recall any spaces where they don't let women in. As I think the cultural, like, annoyance to, like, a bachelorette party in a gay bar is just the sheer fact that sometimes maybe they are disrespectful in the amount of, like, energy they're taking up or the amount of space they're taking up in that space. But for the most part, I mean, I go with my girlfriends to gay bars all the time. I mean, yeah, it's not, I don't think I've ever been in a space where women aren't allowed.
Because that's, I mean, that's, you know, XXL in London was really important in my understanding of myself, because never have I felt so alien in a space. And that was, it was literally in the couple of years before I started my transition. So it was kind of like a Adore Delano meme. I don't belong here. Right. And it was, you know, when you're just like, yeah, this is, you know, no, it was ridiculous. I've always found as well that my, you know, back in the day, pre-transition, my straight cisgender girlfriends liked going to gay venues because they felt they could let their hair down. They weren't going to get poured. They weren't going to get chatted up. They could just dance to girls aloud and not worry about predatory men.
Right.
However, I think the conversation has now turned, and I read a really great thing, and it's in this month's Attitude magazine. If you've got a copy handy, it's with a drag queen from Birmingham called Fat Butcher, and that is a British cultural reference. Tommy, we have a very iconic soap character called Pat Butcher, and Fat Butcher is a large drag queen, like a plus size drag queen, and they were saying that increasingly they're having issues with straight cis women and consent, and in particular these women grabbing them and, like, putting hands all over their body and touching their chest and touching their ass. And so it's interesting then that the reason that I think some women came into queer spaces has become the problem with women in queer spaces.
That's interesting. That really is interesting.
I was going to say, because I was thinking about how the ladies behaved in the episode, and they were, like, they were okay. Like, they were pretty respectful, I thought. I was a bit unsure about, like, Samantha at the urinal, like looking at all of them. I was a bit like, I'm not sure how I'd react. if it was Kim Cattrall, obviously, I'd be like, oh, hey.
But would you want to show her your dick is really the problem. When she seems to be checking out their genitals.
Right.
I mean, I personally wouldn't mind, but I understand that a lot of people.
Listeners, would you mind Kim Cattrall looking at your genitalia? Answers on a postcard.
I think I'd be shy. I don't think I'd be able to go to the bathroom. I'd be like, "Hi, Kim. How are you doing? What's going? What's happening?"
Do you know?
I'd be shy.
Pre-transition, I could not use urinals for that reason. I could not wear urinals. I always liked a cubicle. I was that weird person who would queue for a cubicle, not even to do drugs, just to use the toilet.
I'm the same way. It's the trough situation. I don't really understand. I'm not a fan of the trough. Mostly because of the backsplash. It's not really...
it's not the fantasy. The backsplash is not the fantasy.
It's not the fantasy. It really... Yeah, I'm weird like that, and that I don't want a bunch of my own pee back coming at my face. But, I mean, I'm that is... some people do.
That is weird. Why not?
A self-golden shower. Yeah, like a golden shower for one.
There's nothing wrong with it. Just not my, you know, what I would order at the restaurant. But
yeah. So I think it's lovely to see Charlotte having a lovely time. I did love the bit where all of a sudden all the men just start making out with each other around her, because that was, and I'm sorry, that was something I was guilty of back in my clubbing heyday as well, which is I would go out and I'd be like really bored and I'd say to my girlfriend, like, do you want to come out? It's going to be really good fun and we will just go out and we will dance and it's going to be so much fun and it's going to be like Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion. And then like the clock would strike 12 and she would be dead to me and I would just go on the pole and I'd be like, bye! And like, oh, I was such a nightmare child. Like, I like to know I would not do that. Dylan, have you also abandoned your female friends in the quest for dick?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I've been really bad with that before. But it serves them right for using me as an accessory. No, I'm kidding. All my female friends absolutely would be mortified they're so not that. But yeah, I've totally done that. And it's something that I am glad to say I haven't done like in the last 2 or 3 years.
No, I think I got to the stage as well where if you've just gone out with one girlfriend, you can't abandon them. It's just not safe.
No.
It's just not safe. They might be murdered. So.
Yeah.
So young gays, if you are taking your female friends out clubbing, don't leave them when you find a shag. Put them in an Uber. The least you can do is get them an Uber. At the very least, get them an Uber.
Yeah, I did. I mean, when I was younger, I did that once, and my friend who is much older than me, like, really yelled at me and was like, "It's so dangerous." You don't really think about like the dangers of like someone. You're like, "Oh yeah, you're right." Like, they're in a space that they're not comfortable in. So at least put them in an Uber, at least.
At the very least.
I remember Charlotte said, "We don't. I feel like we don't belong here," which she's kind of. I mean, that was kind of woke. Could be like woke Charlotte coming in a bit, being like realizing that. realizing they don't belong in the space.
Yeah. Charlotte's very respectful. Like, she, everything she does is she's very conscious of like how the people around her. So I really think that she understands that the space isn't hers.
I'm amazed they got her through the door. I'm like amazed they managed to convince Charlotte to go to trade with them. And also Miranda, who is quite preggo now. So yeah, well done, Carrie. Yeah.
I think maybe they only got Charlotte because she was fighting with Trey. Like, she was in, like, they were fighting all day, right? So that was probably what got her out of the house.
The clubbing feels like a plot device because we need to meet Oliver Spencer with Jox and Cox. Yeah. Jox and Cox 4.
Jox and Cox 4,
wasn't it? Yeah, so yeah. Murray Bartlett... recent audiences might recognize Murray Bartlett from White Lotus and Looking, the Andrew Haig series. But long before, when White Lotus was just a tiny bud, he was here as Oliver Spencer, as Antipodean gay about town Oliver Spencer, who works, he's a shoe buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Distributor.
Yeah. Distributor.
Yeah. And then, and then Carrie says, it would be cruel to kid me.
and he loves Carrie. Her column is his New York survival guide.
Yeah.
What did we think of Oliver? I think at the time, so remember, when I was first watching this, I was a 19-year-old queer kid from West Yorkshire who had never actually had a boyfriend at this point. Not a serious one anyway. And I was... scandalized that he had a boyfriend back home but was still allowed to sleep with other men.
Right.
The shock, the horror.
The shock of that. The shock of monogamy, non-monogamous relationships. Really, it really, that threw me for a loop. I was like, oh, cool. What? Okay. Is that allowed? Is that a lawful thing? Yeah. I'm in the same boat.
So Juno and I have discussed before my open relationship. And we said before that it's interesting that Sex and the City doesn't really go there with any of, not in a major plot point way anyway. And I thought it was interesting that this was like sort of how intrigued Carrie was by it as like a new concept. Whereas now it's kind of pretty par for the course, isn't it? That was just interesting that she kind of muses on it. And in fact, it forms the question, doesn't it, this week?
The question that we have to answer this week is, to be a couple, do you have to put your single self on a shelf? I think this is a good question. actually. I think some of Carrie's questions are absolute bullshit. I think this one, I mean, some of them are, but this one actually makes sense. And I think it is a question that a relationship columnist should be asking. And yeah, this is, I believe, the one and only time open relationships are even discussed. Mm-hmm. I was shocked, not because the concept is shocking, but because we don't see polyamory discussed in the mainstream media. And when it is, right, it's portrayed as being something quite freakish, like in Big Love, I guess, the, mm-hmm, the HBO Mormon series where Bill Pullman has loads of wives. And so the idea that normal, handsome Australian shoe distributors would have more than one partner was shocking, yeah, to me as a teenager, just because I hadn't seen it. And then obviously as I moved to Brighton and then London, I realised actually queer couples seem to be way ahead of straight couples, mm-hmm, in recognising the fundamental truth that we can't expect one person to give us everything for the rest of our lives. And the problem is I've been so fed on happily ever after, and you know, you will meet one Prince Charming and that one Prince Charming will satisfy your every whim for forever. It's a lie, and that is, it's a problem, and I think it's a dangerous lie, because I think it leads people to enter quite unhealthy relationships. So actually now, as a grown-up, Oliver is a rare example of, I think, dare I say it, great representation. I don't think Work Charlotte is going to have any problems with the Oliver character.
Yeah, that's true. He's, like, nice and sociable. And, like, yes, he does, like, piss Carrie off when they're at the, what's it called?
Bungalow 8.
Club 8 or something. Bungalow 8.
Yeah. You need a key.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's just kind of living his best life, really, isn't he? And I kind of found that, I found that scene quite satisfying, because I was like, that'll show you, Carrie. Like, not everything's about you all the time. And then, right, of course, the instant that it isn't about her, she really isn't like that and, like, runs off home. But yeah, the open relationship. What do you think, Tommy, about that, like, on the inclusion of it in Sex and the City and in, like, TV now?
You know, the idea of being in a monogamous relationship is fine if both parties are like, that's what I need, or that's how I see a relationship.
Oh, totally.
That's what I need to feel fulfilled. But there are... there needs to be that kind of conversation. I think the expectation of just monogamy is so hostile and act of violence. Like, you need to be able to have an open dialogue about what each other needs. Like, I've been in monogamous relationships where the other person definitely needs just to be, and that's how they view a successful relationship. I'm in one now where we have conversations about, you know, we're a couple, but we're still individual people and we still have needs. And so it's very much an open dialogue of, like, what, where each other is lacking, and where I can maybe, what I can fulfill, what I can't fulfill, and all of those things. So we are in a sort of open relationship in the way of, like, we hang out with other people together. I think that's what we've come to agree on. But you know, that is a constant dialogue. That's something we talk about a lot. And it's something that if you don't have that, the openness to talk about that stuff, that's when things, like, get really bad. I think that's when things get, people start resenting each other and all that stuff. So I think that, it's great to see some progressiveness in the Sex and the City worlds, I think. But it's also, I feel like Sex and the City is kind of a reflection of, like all the women are different reflections of what the writers tried to boil down to four women. Do you know what I mean? And then so it was a reflection of, like, monogamy in a larger sense. So I think monogamy, and this could very well be because, you know, it could be like a Catholicism thing of why polygamy is seen as so, like, freakish, is because it's so not part of the Catholic Church.
It's interesting, I think, because I'm now running through my internal Rolodex of examples of polyamory in the media. And the only one, weirdly, that I can think of is Looking, the Andrew Haig series with Murray Bartlett, where two guys are in an open relationship, but then it gets complicated, and they kind of look at the sort of the nuances of having an open relationship. Queer as Folk. Did the American version of Queer as Folk have an open relationship? Did the L Word have an open relationship?
I don't know if it did. Gay media. I'm just kidding. Mm. I don't watch gay media. I don't watch queer. No. I think they did. Truthfully, I think they did. Yeah.
Because I've never seen, so this is where I first up, I've never seen the American Queer as Folk. I felt I didn't need it. I had seen the British version. I did not need the American version in my life. And I just went straight to the L word because we hadn't had a British L word.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I think it's sad that that's not more. You know, most of the queer couples I know have some sort of open relationship-ness to them.
Right.
I hope they are going to be discussing it in And Just Like That. And I hope if they discuss it in And Just Like That, that it's done in a way that isn't, ooh, swingers. Because that's usually how it ends up with, if it's going to be straight couples, it's like, oh my God, they swing. And they're like really kinky because they swing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I think we need to normalize open relationships with cis straight people.
It's so fascinating because I have a lot, I work with a lot of straight couples, and it's fascinating because I can see there's a divide between the constraints of being a monogamous relationship and the rigidity of that, but also their like need to have that in order to define or feel valid. Mm. Does that make sense? Like they it's almost like it's this love-hate relationship with rigidity or with monogamy. They need it to define themselves.
And it's almost like, obviously not everyone thinks this. I want to preface this with that.
Everyone
but I think a lot
thinks
of...
this. This is a sweeping generalization that applies to every single human ever.
All of us.
But a lot of the people that I know, like the kind of the cast of the people that you're talking about, Tommy. And I think a lot with that, it's almost seen as like a challenge that they need to like prove themselves to achieve it. And it's like, why challenge yourself? Like if it's a challenge, explore other options, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's the idea of success, maybe, or people can't define success for themselves or happiness for themselves. So they have the benchmarks that society provides for them. I'm not a doctor. Mm. I'm not a therapist in any way. In fact, I'm a college dropout. So all of what I'm saying is bullshit. So do not listen to me.
No, I think there's something to it. I think there is. And I think
you're right.
Purity around women as well. I think there is a reason that characters like Oliver are able to have open relationships on television, but characters like Carrie can't. And that's because whereas Oliver is a man about town, Carrie would just be a whore, you know? She would just be a slut who's sleeping with two men. My God, she kisses Aiden once in Dubai and has to confess to Big. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like there is such a different, you know, she would be chased out of town with a scarlet letter. And so I think that's why when straight cis couples have open relationships, it kind of goes into this, you know, I mean, bless them. You know, some of my friends go to like Torture Garden once a month in London so they can kind of like put on some PVC. And, you know, it's like, I'm just like, oh, God, that's such a lot of work. You know, just why? All the dressing up to become, and almost like you have to become a different character in order to do it, kind of. And I'm like, oh, God, that's hard work. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just can't be arsed with having an open relationship. But I think the important thing is my husband and I, we talked about it really early on, like really early on in our relationship. And I was just like, oh, God, you know, if you want to, I wouldn't be mad at you. But then he was like, the reason I really like being with you is because I don't have to trawl the world looking for other people to sleep with. And I'm like, cool. Then there we are then. Sorted. Amazing.
Great.
And all's well that ends well. But I quite like we've answered half of Carrie's question there, because for people in open relationships, no, you do not have to put your single self on a shelf, because you can have all the fun of sleeping with random strangers while also eating KFC in bed with John Corbett. and rubbing his tummy when he has too much KFC.
And his oily dad bod.
Oh, so sexy. Do you know, even with his poorly tummy, I still fancied John Corbett.
He's
hot. Oh, he's so hot. Thank you for joining the powerful sexiness of John Corbett Club.
Yeah, I'm an Aiden fan for sure. Mm. He's kind of a jerk in that he's like unopinionated. Do you know what I mean? It's like, just do something. Like, you know what I mean? Slap me. But I think that he's hot, yeah.
Oh, so hot. I mean, and I understand why he doesn't want to go clubbing. That's not his gig. And I think somewhat, for example, before we go to break, a little anecdote from Juno's life. I know we all enjoy them, especially that one person on Twitter who messages us every week to scream at us about how we talked about our own lives and not the show.
But they listen every week,
Thanks for listening, I guess. Fun. Thanks for listening and then
you're
hating it.
You're doing something, right?
Thank you. Every listener counts. But really, Ellen, Max has been to one like literary publishing-y party. And it was in 2018. We'd only been going out a little while. And there was this amazing moment where we both just realised, I don't really like having my boyfriend at professional events. And he realised, I hate this. And so we've never done it again.
So that's great.
Yeah, we've never done it again. I go off, I put on my little dress, I put on the heels, I go, I hang out with Dylan and Chris and all my fabulous London friends. And then I go back. And Max has eaten the chicken and I rub his tummy. And I totally understand Carrie and Aiden's relationship. But unlike Carrie, I have no desire for Max to join me in trade.
That's a gorgeous love story.
Thanks, Tommy. Thanks.
Gorgeous.
Thanks. Let's go to break. We'll speak to you in a couple of minutes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Okay, welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. We're on season 4, episode 14, All That Glitters, discussing the ladies' venture into gay nightlife. And that is kind of the main crux of the episode, isn't it? That's kind of what spurs all the things that happen, including Samantha, like, really hectically tumbling out into the street after a night on ecstasy, which I was obsessed with. Like, with all of her mascara running and, like, saying, can I get a fucking cab? That was one of my favourite scenes. That was amazing.
I like the idea that, as well, Ecstasy is a very dangerous drug, not because potentially it could kill you if you accidentally take PMA or something, but because she has, while high on ecstasy, as is often the case, she's really, really feeling the love. Ecstasy, listeners, do not, we are not encouraging you to do ecstasy. Officially, we are not encouraging you to do MDMA. It's a dangerous, dangerous drug, as Samantha points out. Because yes. You might tell someone that you love them. In fact, you will definitely tell someone that you love them. I once heard of a woman... I once heard of a woman who did some ecstasy in a club. And she told her best friend's boyfriend, who she hated, that she loved him. So it is. It's a dangerous drug. It will make you lie to people.
Next time you see her, in fact, I think I might know who you're talking about, and I think I listened to her podcast.
Okay.
next time you see her, just warn her. Tell her to watch this episode of Sex and the City.
I will pass it on. Just, I heard she only did half a pill as well.
So. Oh,
even
wow.
Half a pill is very dangerous. And yes, so in the show this week, for that one listener on Twitter who hates us, Samantha does some ecstasy in the club and she tells Richard that she loves him. And of course, this is a boo-boo because Richard is notoriously hard to get.
Right.
And she thinks she's fucked up. And then he doesn't say it back. And it's a whole big thing.
I was surprised that Samantha, because Samantha says sex on X is supposed to be amazing. And I was like, has she not had, I was surprised she hadn't already had sex on ecstasy. I'd have thought she'd be more than au fait with chem sex. I mean, oh my God, Samantha has chem sex in this episode.
Not for the first time, because she had the Viagra sex with the guy from Lost Boys as well.
Mm. That's true. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I think that Samantha is someone that is open to new experiences, but maybe she doesn't seek them out in the way that, like, she's like, oh, I want to try to have sex on X. You know what I mean? I don't think she would, like, venture. I think if it's in her like, perif, then she'll do it. But I don't know if she'd seek
You're right,
out.
If, like, Charlotte decided that she wanted to, she'd have, like, a list of all the best dealers in Manhattan and then, like, the best times to do it and what you should drink and eat beforehand.
Right, the pros and cons, the schedule before, the schedule after. She cancels her day after because, you know, she'll be coming down, ABCD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So I've heard.
I think there are issues from a really boring behind the scenes. And now I work in television. There are people who work in television studios who are called compliance, the compliance department. And the idea that Samantha Jones, even on HBO, is a habitual drug user would probably get compliance involved. Like, is this show setting a bad example? Can we have... Because, you know, even HBO, you know, if you have a character like Rue in Euphoria doing drugs, you best believe we're going to see her end up in rehab, kind of. And I think at the time in the 90s, things were very, very different. I think, remember, we were in a moral panic about ecstasy. And I think we've got to put this episode in context that this would have been 2001. Throughout the 90s, I can't speak for the US, but in the UK, we were in the grip of a moral panic about this new drug that was killing teenagers. We all remember the name Leah Betts. That is a name that was burned on our memories forever. She was a teenage girl who died after taking ecstasy. You know... And I mean, when I was then later a teacher, when I was in high schools, you know, we'd slightly changed the tune and it wasn't like, if you do ecstasy, you will die. It was about how it was about understanding risk management and that if you are taking any drug, you know, can you get your drug tested? Can you be sure you're taking what you think you're taking? Never leave your friends by themselves. Increasingly, you know, it's funny because at the moment we're having a new moral panic at the moment about drinks being spiked. Which is really interesting because I remember drinks being spiked when I was in college 20 years ago. But I think sometimes that's the way moral panics works. And I think ecstasy is the iconic 90s designer drug. And right. I think this is Sex and the City's way of talking about it. And to be fair, they don't really go into the moral panic. And I think they sort of say, you know, well, Samantha literally says ecstasy is a dangerous, dangerous drug.
Right. So they're right,
kind
in her
of
way.
Yeah, they've done the moral majority bit, but in a way that's fun and new and doesn't feel like finger wagging.
Preachy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here right now, I think right now everyone's scared that people are cutting drugs and I don't even know. I don't do drugs anymore. I'm past those days. I actually have an ex story. I one New Year's Eve took ex with a bunch of my friends, having a great time. New Year's Eve came and went. It was like 4 a.m. Everyone was like, it's we're done. And I was like, no, come on, let's keep it going. And then I took another one.
Oh no.
huge mistake. I was up for 3 days. I was up for a long, I was like, wow, that's a dangerous drug.
It's interesting because it's so interesting because obviously we in the UK, we digest so much American media. And but one of the things that the real difference between the US and the UK is we're not really seeing the same issue with opioids that you see in America. And it's really interesting, so much TV coming out of North America at the moment, like Ozark and Euphoria and even American Horror Story this year, are looking at kind of the way that sort of fentanyl and things have really hit communities. And we just don't have that here. So we have whole different moral panics around drugs. But I wonder, was there like a US equivalent of Leah Betts? Was there that one American teenage girl who died taking ecstasy, and did she become like a poster girl?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there. No, I think the main concern around here is like who's in control of passing laws, and like big pharma is a big one where they prescribe very quickly and people become addicted to the prescription pills. But you can't really say anything because it's like prescribed, and that's like doctor, someone who went to medical school is giving you that permission. So you can't really, you're not above that, but they're also being controlled by like drug distributors or advertisers for a specific brand name of drug to push that. And they probably, and there's this thing on Netflix called The Pharmacist. I don't know if you've seen it. It talks about, her name is Dr. It begins with an A, but she was a doctor in, God, I'm gonna butcher all of this. She was a doctor in the South in America, and she would just prescribe left and right, and it came out that she was being influenced to prescribe, and it became this huge, people would just go to her with like random ailments in order to get prescriptions, and she would just keep passing out slips, and she was taking them herself, it turns out, and her brain had gone, had receded. I think that is the biggest. There is, I don't know if there, I can't recall if there's been a poster person where it's like, do not take.
Because it's funny. I mean, it's funny now. I mean, it still happens. I think, every summer some poor kid drops dead at a music festival. And I know, again, we're much more interested in harm reduction now. Get your drugs tested. Make sure you're taking what you think. And the big one, and this is the subject of my book, Clean, one of my novels, available in all good bookshops, is about a girl. And usually what happens when people die of ecstasy, they haven't taken ecstasy at all. They've taken something called PMA, thinking it's ecstasy. And actually, PMA is basically a very strong antidepressant, whereas MDMA is a euphoric. And so that's the problem. If people were taking what they thought they were taking, they would have probably been safe. And it's probably not the first time they've taken it as well. Anyway, that's miserable. That was a detour into the world of Samantha Jones and MDMA. In the end,
we love a detour, though.
Richard was kind of fine with it in the end. They're like together now.
Yeah.
He admits he has strong feelings for it. All's well that ends well. Who shall we look at next? Shall we look at Dress Down Fridays, or shall we do the Trey and Charlotte stuff, which is actually quite moving. Sorry, I know.
Yeah, I felt bad. I felt bad for Charlotte. And a line that I actually felt quite sort of chilling was when Carrie's voiceover said, even though Charlotte and Trey weren't together, little girls and their mother's pearls would be looking at what they thought was the ideal life. And I was like, oh, that's that's quite bleak.
That theme of smiling, forced smiling with pain behind your eyes is like, is gorgeous. It's so romantic. Yeah. It's so beautiful. It's just something that I anything I ever want to make, I want there to be a character that's like forcing happiness, and then there's just so much pain and sadness behind there. Oh, beautiful, gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. little factette, the guy who plays Anthony's boyfriend, the photographer guy from House and Country magazine, this is his second outing in Sex and the City. He was previously in the episode with the underwear party. He's the guy who it's him playing different characters. Wow. But it's the same actor back playing a slightly more substantial role. I like the scene, although, yes, like Dylan says, it's quite dark that the next generation of girls are now buying the same lie that Charlotte bought when she was a little girl.
Gorgeous.
Trey has been so bad to Charlotte in lots of ways. I love that he does this one thing for her. He gives her like this parting gift. And actually later on, Trey does this again later on when he forces Bunny to lay off, when he lets Charlotte keep the multi-million pound house. You know, I like that Trey isn't a total villain. You know, he's been such a shit. He, you know, from day one hasn't been the best partner to Charlotte, but he gives her this one moment that she's a little dream that she's always had is fulfilled. She gets her town and country or whatever it's called moment. And just for one day, she gets the marriage that she thought she was getting. And then obviously that's it. That is it.
There's so many like clever, I mean, maybe this is us reading too much into it, but that's what we're here to do. There's so many like clever implications with that scene as well. Like really what Charlotte wants is a marriage from like the pages of a magazine. And that's what she wanted her and Trey's marriage to be. And it could never be that. And like really no marriage can ever be that. But yeah, interesting. I was half disappointed that Bunny wasn't in it, actually, in the background, like trying to like put a mallard in the background of the photo shoot or something.
The duck decoy would be quite distracting in a magazine. But I think that's kind of, I don't know how far ahead they planned the plot lines for the characters. But then I think that's why Harry, spoilers, we're about to get to Harry. That's why Harry is such a great character, because he's a million miles from the man Charlotte thought she would end up with, from the kind of like the cardboard cutout handsome husband. And I think that's why Harry Goldenblatt is such a great character, because he challenges Charlotte's preconception of who she is and the future that she thought she would have. And so I don't know at what point they were like, right, Charlotte's going to marry this guy, and it's Kyle MacLachlan, and he's perfect on paper, but he has premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction, and then he refuses to have IVF with her, and then he gives her a cardboard baby, and then they get divorced. But then she meets this other guy who isn't like a Ken doll, but he loves Charlotte inside and out, and she loves him, and it all works out. But I don't know how far ahead they planned that out, but her trajectory is perfect.
And it's really great. The character growth is really fabulous to see what she thought she wanted, go through what she wanted, and we learned the lessons with her. We saw her learn her lessons. We saw her grow and be like, oh, I've made huge mistakes, and then jump. Her and Harry, when she decided that, we were like, this, we agree. We were on the journey with her. We felt like, this makes sense. It's really well done. Do you think they planned it out that way, or
it depends?
Just natural?
So normally, from my meetings in TV, they like to know that you've got 3 years planned out. Of course, right. If nobody tunes in, they will cancel you after one season with very little ceremony. So one suspects, obviously, the first season of Sex and the City was a huge hit for HBO. It did really, really well. So they must have known that they were going to be around for a while. And everybody always says you usually lock actors down for 6 or 7 years. But you kind of... So one suspects after that first season was a big hit, they did start to plan things forward, going forward. Certainly, if you look at the end of series 3, there was some kind of a resolution there with with Carrie and Big and with Miranda and Steve and with Charlotte and Trey, they part ways at the end of series three.
Yeah, because I remember we said it almost had like show for not like the absolute end, but because I said to you, I wonder if they plan to end it after season three at one point, because there's sort of an ending, which is interesting.
It could have, had it been cancelled at Cock-a-Doodle-Doo, we would have always been left with transphobia. But it ends with the line, don't worry about them, they have a very lovely life. You know, so it ended on such a, you know, we
would have been left with
that episode.
We would have been left with that.
It's so true. It's
Can you imagine if Carrie. That had been the last episode? With Carrie screaming.
Hey, you with the flower. You with the flower.
You talking really, to me?
Yeah, wow.
We ended with transphobia and cultural appropriation. But a happy ending.
Right, sure.
Thank God we didn't end up... Mind you, as it is, we've ended on the Sex and the City 2 movie, so...
that's not the ending anymore. There's going to be more. There's more.
Yes.
There's more. Yes. There's going to be more now, so it's fine. We never
have I couldn't watch film. The movie, the second one. I walked out.
Yes, that is the correct response. Correct.
I do not think of it as part of canon. I don't think of it as part of.
I think it was. It's. Yeah. Carrie had her second dose of Moderna, and it's the fever dream she had after her second dose of Moderna. Frankly, that's the only explanation for what that film is. Let's finish with Miranda and her poor sweet gay colleague. They're both harboring secrets. Miranda. For some cultural reason that I don't think we would understand in this country because we just have national maternity leave. And Miranda is really worried about revealing she's pregnant. So all I can assume is that in America, there are issues around taking parental leave.
Huge. Oh, there's okay. huge, huge issues around it. And even at the slightest idea that you might be pregnant, they look for people to like, it's like a threat to your job. It's illegal, quote unquote, but it's very much like it's almost looked down upon. It's like you're celebrated in the community to have a baby and everyone, you know, everyone's very excited. But a lot of times it's seen as like almost like as a weakness. And it's like you're like holding us back from progress if you have a child. It's there are a lot of situations like that. It's really awful.
I mean,
really awful.
We've talked about similar things in this. I was once on a hiring panel when I was a teacher where a female headmistress in her 50s wouldn't appoint a 29-year-old deputy head who had just got married because, oh, she'll be having babies soon, which I thought was the most astonishing thing I'd ever heard. However, legally, parents are entitled to parental leave. And one of my big campaigns is pushing for both parents to get the same amount of parental leave. Because I think that is when feminism will have truly leapt forward, when hiring a woman comes with no greater risk than hiring a man. And when we had Alice on a couple of years back, Alice Bevan-Palmer, she said, we think this is the single biggest thing that we could do as the feminist movement is to... make sure that both parents, whether they're both men, both women, men or women, that they are non-binary parents, that everybody gets the same amount of leave by law, and that way, truly, women would be protected within the workplace. And I'm also sad that her colleague, whose name I've completely forgotten, I want to say his name is Sam.
It could be Sam. I remember he's cute. That's about all.
He is cute. And he, bless him, he's scared to come out at work, which is also sad. That's also really sad. And a damning indictment of early noughties law firms in New York City.
Yeah, your minority is kind of your liability. It's really, that is unfortunately a lot of the case.
That really sucks. And we had a very similar show in the late 90s in the UK called This Life. And I can't remember if Warren, who is the gay one, was, and they were lawyers as well. I wonder if Warren was out. No, I don't think he was, because one day he went into work with cum in his hair and he was really scared that would Yeah. So
was it a sitcom?
It was kind of like, again, a comedy drama thing. So it was a bit like Sex and the City, where Warren had a little dried cum in his hair and he was worried.
I've not thought
about this life in years.
Miranda's had cum in her hair, so she's at the tantric sex workshop. So she should identify with these sort of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She outs him by accident, doesn't she, Miranda?
She outs him by accident. I believe, is it Fern who is trying to organise Dress Down Fridays, who's been trying to get it past the partners for years, and finally Dress Down Friday is here. And yes, so first of all, he tries to defend Miranda for being late and stuff by, he's not trying to get her office, he's trying to get the others to cut Miranda some slack. And then Miranda says, well, how would you feel if I told everyone you were gay? And then, unfortunately, Fern is standing right behind them. And as the office gossip...
God, Fern.
Fucking Fern. Fuck, just fuck Fern.
Fern is a woman in pain. And I the amount of pain that comes out that she's like, I finally got it. Finally got it approved. Yeah. It is so, like, whoever the actress is, like, thank you so much, because she was able to convey this this whole, like, life story of this woman who's, like, just toiled in her law office and is, like, obviously a gossip and is terrible. But I love Fern, but, like, ironically love Fern. She is terrible. But
We've all worked with Fern. We have definitely all worked with Fern. She hasn't got a lot at home. I'm thinking about her home life now, and it's making me quite sad. I think she I think she definitely has a cat. No offense, cat people. I think she has cats. I think she works late into the night. She's probably part of a book group that she also micromanages, and I bet she's something of a dictator in the book group as well.
Yeah, just this these little things that people need to do to feel like they have power or autonomy over themselves is just truly gorgeous. Like, it's just a small thing. You're like, if I do this one thing, then I will be happy. Oh, beautiful, Fern. Congratulations.
Although, unfortunately, Miranda's colleague completely fucks over Dress Down Friday, because a reason that I can't fathom... He goes to Clone Zone and he buys a beautiful, like, mesh top, and he wears it to the office. He was told to dress down. He wore his see-through top, and that was the end of Dress Down Friday. I like to think he knew what he was doing. He was like, I hate this.
Do you think
understand what smart casual means, so I'm going to destroy this. And Fern has it coming.
Do you think he was fucking... Do you think he was really just fucking with Fern? He was like, right, I'm just going to wear this just to make Fern take the blame. And be
But he's young. And do you know what? When I was in my 20s, I wore some mad shit thinking it was professional. I remember once I thought it was really chic. It was really chic. I wore tweed trousers pre-transition. Actually, this would be a serve post-transition. But pre-transition, I wore tweed trousers with a matching tweed waistcoat. And then I wore, like, this shirt with, like, those things, you know, like, those bands you put around your elbows to hold your sleeves up. And I think I looked like an old-timey barkeep. And this was when I was a teacher in quite a challenging school in quite a rundown area. So I must have looked the monorail guy from The Simpsons. You know, the guy who brings the monorail to town. I just needed a little boat cap and a cane as well. Like, what was I thinking?
See, now that would be quite... It would be quite sort of Gillian Anderson now.
Like, I'm thinking Kate Blanchett. Yeah, I think I would wear that now. Yeah. I need to dig that one back out. It would look really sick. Interesting. Oh, poor Sam, that is indeed your name. Poor guy.
And it could also be one of those things where he's like, if you don't like me, I'm going to make you hate me, which is how I was in school. I was like, oh, you don't like that I'm gay? I'm going to be fucking gay, bitch. I'm going to be a faggot and I'm going to make you look at this.
Yeah.
So it could be that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing in his head that didn't say, it is Dress Down Friday, but it's still a law firm.
No, yeah.
He did half that. He's like, he did half the computation. I can wear whatever I want.
It's the classic day to night, though. His outfit goes from day to night. So that's maybe he's going out later for drinks. So.
Or he hasn't been home. since the night before. So he's been to trade. Yeah, he's come straight from Thursday night trade because Thursday's the new Friday. So he's been out. He's been to fire down Vauxhall, and he's just gone straight to the office. He's washed his pits and gone to the office.
Listen, in this life, you have to wear many hats. So if you have to go from trade to work, so be it.
Right. Yeah. Before we finish, we need to finish. We end by trying to answer Carrie's question. So to be in a relationship, does our single self have to go on the shelf? Go.
So I think, like we were saying, like Tommy was saying before, I think not necessarily, as long as everyone communicates and you can get a good, whether it's a monogamous relationship or an open relationship, and you can get a good balance of doing what you want to do and then like having the nice relationship side of it as well.
I'm going to not disagree, but I have a slightly different perspective, which is I think no, because I think if your single self is different from the person you're pretending to be in a relationship, there is something quite wrong with that. And it suggests there's something about her question that suggests we are not our authentic selves when we're in a relationship. And actually, I think I was guilty of doing that all through my 20s, whereby I kind of role played the person that I thought you had to be to have a successful relationship. And actually now, you know, in my marriage, I am very authentically me. And so I'm the same person that I was when I was single. And I think what the reason our relationship works is because, and a lot of this I think was to do with my transition, was after 32 years of pretending to be a person I wasn't, I didn't have any energy left. And I really did sort of say to Max, this is who I am. And if you don't like it, fuck it. And luckily for me, Max was on board with the whole Juno experience. But I think if there is something different about the way you are when you're single and the way you are when you are with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, I think there is potentially a problem there that needs addressing. Tommy, thoughts, feelings?
That's truly so gorgeous, and I'm gonna cry.
That was a little bit. Yeah. That was a level of deepness we don't often visit on this podcast.
I agree with everything you're saying. I don't think you should have to leave your. You should be the same person. You are who you are. Wherever you go, there you are. If you're this way in Boston, you're this way in Japan. Or I could play devil's advocate and say you have to change yourself completely to be in a relationship. Otherwise you won't be happy. Being in a relationship means, just like hiding, deleting Facebook pictures, hiding who you were 5 years ago. being in a relationship means lying to yourself and lying to your partner and like watching Disney movies and trying to portray those characters for the rest of your life.
But that is interesting.
No?
But
is that
I know.
Right?
I think you might be onto something. That I think you're onto something because also being in a relationship is work. So actually, you do have to change yourself. You have. We've talked so much on this podcast about compromise. So actually, we're all right. We are all three of us.
No, I'm just kidding.
Correct.
I'm just kidding. I'm just if you need to change
yourself,
we're
gonna
edit it. Yeah. If you
so it
don't,
sounds
yeah.
like that's your advice.
That's my advice. Okay. I'm kidding. If you need to change yourself to be in a relationship, truly, like, I feel bad for you. I feel bad for you. Like, you need to find somebody who likes you, who you can fart in bed with, who doesn't mind, when we poop a lot. People poop. And so if you can talk about that and be open with that, then you're in a place where you're comfortable. And isn't that being in a relationship is being comfortable? Isn't that what it's about?
100%. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's a lovely message on which to end, which is that is the best test. Tonight, if you're in a relationship, go home and talk about poop. And if that does not go down well, this is not a healthy relationship.
It isn't healthy. If they don't say you need to eat more bananas and give you some suggestions onto why your poop is so dry, then you need to seek out elsewhere.
Oh, Tommy, I think we might have to be best friends from this point onwards. So I've achieved something this hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Tommy. Where can we find you on social media? Is there anything you would like to plug?
There's some stuff happening. I don't know if I can talk about that right now. But you can find me on Instagram, Tommy2_Doe. I don't want to hear comments about there's 2 underscores. I know it's 2021. People have no underscore. People have the 1 underscore. I've been to their house and they have a restraining order against me. So Tommy2_Doe is where you can find me.
Awesome. And we are at SIGTT Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Next week, we will be watching season 4, episode 15, which is...
A change of address, is it?
Oh, no! Oh, no! It's all going to go horribly wrong! Oh, no!
Oh, my God, Charlotte's tap dancing, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Carrie has...
Gorgeous.
Carrie gets that dress hives. Yeah. Oh, God. Okay, all that leaves us with is, can we just say a big, big thank you to Tommy for joining us from across the Atlantic to be on our podcast. You're our first American guest. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will see you next week when it's time for that scene by that fountain. Until then, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.